Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Vox Vomitus. I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of the Kindle Award-winning novel for Best Horror, Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, as well as Pretty Ugly and the Hotel series. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, Allison Martin, author S of the Bourbon books, which includes the award-winning novel Dibs, Since September, Move on Melinda, and the very recently released Climb the Salmon Ladder. Welcome, Allison. Our amazing guest today is David R. Slayton, author of the Adam Binder trilogy. I'm going to say them in order.
Okay.
White Trash Warlock, Trailer Park Trickster, Deadbeat Druid. Thank you. Can't see. Not wear my glasses, but
she cannot read this, guys. She can't.
I appreciate the cheat sheet, Allison.
And Elisa says, welcome, David. Hi, Vixens.
Hi, Elisa.
Hello, Elisa. So, David, thank you so much for being here. I know you have been a guest on Allison's show before, To the Moon, Allison. I did watch that show and was like a little jealous because I'm like, he's a great guest. I want to read that book. And since then, I have read 1.5 of your trilogy.
That's like halfway through. If there's three.
I'm halfway through. And I've done it in a week. That you mathed very well. So David, tell us a little bit about yourself and then a little bit about the Adam Binder trilogy.
Okay. I love how Allison's like, boom. I feel like a runner, right? You know what I mean?
I know. I'm like, I've got nothing.
Let's see.
Tarot card.
So I'm David R. Slayton. I'm from Guthrie, Oklahoma, like Adam Binder, my main character. I grew up in a trailer in the woods outside of Guthrie. Guthrie is a cool little town that was the state capital for like 5 seconds. And it's kind of creepy. It's kind of a neat place. As I said in White Trash Warlock, it's a great place to be from, but not necessarily a great place to live when you're like me and all the way I am like me. Like Adam, I'm gay. I'm a high school dropout. And now I live in Denver, Colorado, and write all the books that I couldn't find when I lived elsewhere. Or all the books I want to read but still can't find on the shelves.
So, David, I'm just going to come right out of the gate and say, I had not heard of you until Allison booked you, and then I watched your interview, and I thought to myself, White Trash Warlock, why is that not something that, like, is in my soul? And I think it kind of is. I always joke to people that I was the poorest kid in the richest town in the part of New Hampshire I'm from. So, grew up poor, tiny little house, lived in a trailer for a little while, nothing wrong there. But over the years, I heard the term white trash a lot. And I was like, oh, I don't really get what that means. Because I didn't feel like whatever trash was. And I think I instantly fell in love with your character, Adam, because he embraces it for whatever he thinks it means. He's queer. I'm queer. Like, it's just like, I have like witchy stuff in my house. So thank you for writing a character. Lived, laughed, loved. Thank you for writing a character that poor weirdos from rural places can enjoy.
Thank you for reading it. It's funny how many people email me or reach out and they've never seen themselves in a book. And that's exactly what I was going for, is nobody writes books about us, and we don't get to be the heroes. We don't get to be the main character. We're a stereotype or a joke. And the whole use of the term white trash does get broken down in the first book. And it's a way that Adam thinks about himself. And then, you know, Vic, when he comes along in Adam's life, they have a whole conversation about what it means. And there's a lot of discussions of class and food insecurity, and they're are really important to me because they're all things I went through and all things I experienced and dealing with class struggles. And I can hear from your experience, Jennifer, you went through the same thing of, you know, people have this, like, again, the stigma of living in a trailer, and it's an interesting place to be because now I live in Denver. I have a fairly, you know, what you would consider a, you know, middle class to upper middle class lifestyle.
Yeah.
And it's very funny when I go camping with my friends and they are like, oh, wait, because they forget I'm half redneck. They forget like, that I have all these skills and that I own a gun and all that stuff.
See, I'm not that useful. I'm like the kind of, I'm the kind of poor that can make tomato soup out of ketchup and saltine crackers. But like, I couldn't kill my food and I wouldn't because I'm a vegetarian, but maybe I'm a vegetarian because I never would have been able to.
Exactly. So you do kill your food. So I'm just thinking you're the one gathering all the fruits and berries.
And by fruits and berries, we're saying saltines and ketchup.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe you're killing them. That's all right.
If you had to, like me, if I had to go back and live in a trailer or live in a less, you know, in a different lifestyle again, I bet I could do it. I would know how to survive that.
So you're going to survive the zombie apocalypse is what I just heard you say.
I could, but I don't know if I want to. I don't want to be, yeah. I don't want to be like one of the last, like I have a lot of preppers in my family and a lot of preppers in my, you know, they, and I'm like, you know, I don't fantasize about nuclear war like it's a fun thing.
I don't want to live like that either. Well, and Elisa points out that food insecurity is such an overlooked topic that too many people experience. Thank you for including this in your writing. And I think you do hit the real core of what it's like coming from that kind of background. And then also you've got the contrast of Adam's brother, Bobby, who's like, hi, let's not talk about that part. I'm going to live in my cake house and just pretend that I've never come from that. And I don't even want to acknowledge that part of my family that might still be there. And I love how you bring them together. And over the course of all three books, seeing that relationship grow and change. And obviously, a lot of stuff happens. No spoilers. But
we can do mild spoilers, but I don't want to ruin it for everybody else.
Exactly. Like, some people haven't read even the first book, in which case, get on it. You've had time. But otherwise, we still want people to
hey, I had time and I only got on it a week ago. And I'm
And this hasn't come out yet, at least not here. Has it come out somewhere else? Because sometimes I get different.
Only in Guthrie.
There's a funny story about that. Because when White Trash Warlock came out, I emailed the Guthrie paper and said, hey, you know, small town boy, makes good. Do you want to talk about we don't want to talk about that book.
It's amazing how your small town, even if you have a book coming out, still doesn't want to talk about you. It's the only thing that's happened for my small town in ages, besides like classism. And
I think the title might have put them off a little. Just
they might be like, are we in the book? We are, and we don't like it.
Yeah, we're in the book. But independent bookstores are selling them early, which I'm totally fine with. So here's a hint. I'm not on a sales embargo because I'm not in anyone's danger of hitting a list. And even if I was, I want independent bookstores to be successful. So if you go to an indie or you pre-order it from an indie, you might get it. So I do have quite a few readers who have received their copies of Deadbeat Druid early because they shop from indie stores.
See, and mine, you can see, has the little, mine's not for sale. Mine came directly from the publisher.
I don't even have one yet. I still haven't.
That's the glamorous life of being an author, everyone.
They'll send me some. They'll get here. They'll probably show up while we're on this call, but they'll get here any day.
Well, and I don't think even if you come from a bigger place, you'll necessarily get better treatment from your hometown. I personally, my hometown, such as it is, has a magic mouse and a very famous like ska girl. So nothing I will ever do will be all that important to anybody from Anaheim. So I can just be ignored. I always thought if I came from maybe a smaller town, maybe they would care. But from what you guys told me, no, they wouldn't.
They don't care. I really thought, like in my heart, in my tiny little dead cold heart, I thought they would care because again, way back in the day, I had like a job, like a real job. I worked in an art gallery and I was in charge of PR. And when we had any artists, I reached out to where they were born, where they graduated high school, where they graduated college. And a lot of those towns would print our press release about this artist being in an exhibit. That's not cool. My town.
They're like, no, we don't like art. or
maybe,
artist.
Maybe my epic fantasy comes out next year.
Fantasy. If you can comp it to like House of Dragons meets whatever is more incestuously sexier than House of Dragons, then yes.
I think the important thing is it will not be set in Guthrie, and Guthrie won't take it personally. So yeah, he'll probably have an easier in there to be on their local author shelf.
And here's a spoiler for everyone. My books are never going to feature incest or sexual assault. So, or misogyny. I'm sorry.
What a bummer for those people who are looking for that.
And why are those things so intertwined? Like, maybe intertwined is the wrong word, but why are we always like, oh yes, so on a scale of Luke Skywalker to Lannisters, how incestuous is your fantasy? Why? What about fantasy makes us go, yes, they should all be inbred blondes?
Well, I teach a lot at writing conferences, and one of the things that comes up is there's a misconception that all of the misogyny and rape and the stuff is historically accurate, right? So a lot of these epics are drawing from European history or drawing from periods in history where certainly some of this stuff existed. We can easily say yes, history has incidents of incest and it has incidents of royal incest. And I did not think we'd be talking about this today.
I know. Well, we didn't. You didn't know we were going to be talking about the Habsburg chin. In 5, 4, 3, 2, now.
or you know, sexual assault as part of culture. That said, there's this idea that it was everywhere and completely permeated all of medieval society. So, which is not accurate, historian. So one of the things that drives me a little nuts is I get into these conversations and the first thing that someone will say is, well, it's got to be historically accurate. I'm like, well, first of all, it's not historically accurate. Second of all, are you writing historical fiction? No, I'm writing fantasy. Well, we didn't have dragons. No, so you can
I was going to say, as soon as they introduced White Walkers and dragons, they're historically accurate argument.
Yeah, you can
right
throw
out
that
the window with
there is a Brand museum Star. Someplace in the Midwest that I don't overly want to call out, which claims it's a Bible museum that has a dragon wing.
A dragon wing? Wait, stop. Do you mean a wing or a wing of the museum that
a
is
wing, I've not been there, but I knew plenty of friends when I lived in the Midwest that made the pilgrimage to see it. Yeah, there was like a, because that's how they explained dinosaurs somehow, and I'm still not 100% understanding.
They should have built the wing of the museum to be shaped like a wing.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to know.
Part of the museum, I think, is built like an ark. So they couldn't go too heavy-handed with the themes or else it would be the Rainforest Cafe.
Okay, first off, I missed the Rainforest Cafe. I liked sitting on a zebra's butt.
So wonderfully. If you've read White Trash Warlock, Casa Bonita's in it. So.
I know. And I was like, oh, it's like Rainforest Cafe, except like bigger. Much bigger.
Kitchen ridiculous. Restaurants are. And I'm writing the spinoff now, Rogue Community College. So I might, and there, a mall food court does feature. So I may have to work a Rainforest Cafe.
A mall food court.
I know. I'm like, I'm sorry. Allison and I must quietly weep.
Well, and here's the thing. Jen knows. See, I'm calling you Jen instead of Jennifer. Jennifer knows that I love food in my books. And if you went to a mall food court in your books, I would just be reading that chapter over and over and looking for the same.
And I love mall culture.
Well, you'll be happy to know that the mall is a recurring locale. And because the kids, many of the kids are either human or half human, so they can't eat.
So they have to work at Hot Topic.
They have to go. They have to go out off campus to eat. So the school will often open a door for them that takes them to a food court.
No, I love that because it's one of the recurring things that happens in there. And I know it's not something you specifically made up, but the idea that when you are in certain realms, you cannot eat or drink anything offered to you. So I guess if you're taking classes and you get the munchies, you got to go through a magic portal to Sparrow's maybe, or the Panda Express.
Or Panda Express.
Panda Express.
Well, and have you been to a mall
Express
lately? Tomorrow,
my kid will come. No.
I will say this. Time I was in a mall was because they're in New Hampshire, where I live, in the middle of nowhere. In Concord, New Hampshire, there's an amazing theater called the Hatbox Theater. And they reinvented a space in a dead mall to be a black box theater. And my burlesque troupe performed there for many years pre-COVID.
Okay, and how big of a space? Are we talking like the JCPenney space or?
No, it was not a Sephora. It was like, I can't remember the store they took over, but it ended up being a 100 seat theater.
Okay, so not one of the tiniest spaces.
But no, it was a good, so it was a 100 seat theater with, yeah, like a Banana Republic. And what was great is I've worked professional theater my whole life. This mall theater, the Hatbox Theater, has real dressing rooms because it used to be a store.
And like the regular ones where you're in some closet.
Where you're literally in a closet and or like an old classroom and you have to bring your own mirror.
Mind the gap. I wouldn't have had a choice. That would have you know. Oh, I can't leave a pun like that unused.
You have to, but then of course you need the voice from the tube saying mind the gap as you're getting off. And maybe they have that in London, but I don't know if they have that in New Hampshire.
But yeah, malls are this liminal space and they're all dying. So they come up in Rogue Community College because it's a perfect kind of thing for what I'm trying to do with liminal spaces and how the spirit realm overlaps with stuff. So a dying mall is a perfect feeling for what I want.
I love that so much. The last time that it, unrelated to anything, I mean, kind of related to what we're talking about. My husband and I, his family lives in and around the San Francisco area. And now they live in a community that has a dead mall. And we were there in April and we were just like, can we please go to the dead mall? Like, we just need to photograph it. And they were like, no, there's nothing there. And we're like, no, that's exactly why we need to go. They refused, but they did bring us to the Frank Lloyd Wright designed civic center and government buildings when they were closed, but the doors are still open. So we got to take a lot of weird pictures of like Frank Lloyd Wright offices while they're all closed and big, long, empty hallways. And I was in a weird kind of heaven that I've never experienced before.
I would have loved that. That's the exact kind of research I do. That's the exact kind of location scouting in my for my brain is mix stuff like that up.
I will send you these pictures because you're going to go, please. Are you in a spaceship or are you in a 1954 hotel? It's impossible to tell.
I'm so into this. You have no idea. I'm so into this. The gay bar, or it's not a gay bar, but in Trailer Park.
The bar that happens to be gay.
Well, there's a bar in Trailer Park Trickster that's set in a double wide trailer. And it's actually from Fort Collins, Colorado. It used to be a gay bar called Tornadoes.
Nice. That's and just so, asking for it. Tornadoes.
Tempting fate.
And I needed a bar, so I'm like, okay, but I want something that just really speaks to the speed of this book. So, I'll just, translocate Tornadoes to Oklahoma. And it worked. It's not a gay bar in the book, but it's great.
I love spaces that have been translated that way and become something new because they never fully lose what they used to be. And I've eaten dinner in a train car that's now a restaurant. There's one in LA like that. And there's a local restaurant here in Orange that my son refers to it as the Mexican restaurant church because it used to be a church and then it got, what's it called? Like desanctified or whatever. And for a while it was a place that was a restaurant and now it's specifically a Mexican restaurant. So it clearly says, Avila's El Ranchito and it's so good, but it still looks like a church. So he's really confused by the church that is a Mexican restaurant. So it's really good. Get their Diablo shrimp. Oh, you can't. Vegan. Vegetarian. Get the shrimp.
Our Mexican restaurant in not the town I live in because I live in the middle of nowhere, but my closest town, our Mexican restaurant used to be an old prison and you can eat in the jail cells. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be in a jail cell.
Oh, it's haunted too, so it's awesome. And everything's painted like bright pink and it's called Margaritas.
And it used to be a jail?
Yeah.
Allison would go for the ghost. I think the ghost would get you in.
I'm not so much bothered by the ghost as much as I am thinking about where the food was prepared. And I'm just thinking of toilet brewed drinks. That's really, I don't want to drink.
I mean, it hasn't been a jail for quite some time.
Okay. There's a lot of bleach to go. A long
time ago. And those, like, and only very little of the restaurant is jail cells, and you have to reserve those. But well, you can clank them closed. Yeah.
I love it. Love it, love it, love it.
It's New Hampshire. It's what we have to offer.
But speaking of weird spaces and interesting spaces, so in this fantastic book, which Jen hasn't had a chance to read, so I'm not spoiling anything.
I didn't get it.
I know.
We'll torture her with it.
I do love spoilers, though, so spoil away.
But this isn't even so much a spoiler, but there are so many spaces you create in so many different worlds that people talk about world building, and especially as something in fantasy and urban fantasy, the idea of these different worlds. And so often we read things and go, yeah, I've seen that one before. Not only do you create one new world here, you created a bunch and just moved us from one to another. And every time you're just like, oh, that was really cool and weird. And then something new and cool and weird shows up. And I kind of want to know what you were smoking to to get through all these, because it isn't just like, okay, I'm sure David looked up all of the classic fantasy tropes and figured out, no, none of these are tropes and none of these were things that I saw coming. Although I do want all of them, because we feature an old car and a pair of brothers and salt, that I really would like to see the cast of Supernatural.
I was going to say, did you just describe Supernatural?
They're too old. No shade to Sam and Dean and Jensen Ackles and Jared Padalecki, but your guys are way younger. Adam, he's like 23.
He's 21.
He's 21.
And Jensen Ackles may be, he's ageless, but he's not 23 anymore, guys. Yeah, he's not.
He's nearly, he's pushing 50. He's my age. So
yeah, he's like, I mean, he could still pull it off, but no, we need a much younger and tinier. And I don't think Bobby's 6 foot. However, Jared Padalecki, he's a moose, so he's really, really tall.
He's very tall.
But you have the road trip elements here, then stacked with these different locations, each one drawing you in and just making you go, okay, I don't know if I can survive this place because this is just creeping me out too much. And this is by far, so Jen, you haven't gotten this far yet, this is the creepiest of the three, like hands down. Yeah, it's the creepiest. So I don't mean to imply that you needed any kind of stimulant or illegal substance to get you there, but were there inspirations you were drawing on other than possibly dead malls?
They're all real places. So to kind of help summarize what Allison's talking about, Debbie Druid is a road trip through hell. It's a road trip through the underworld. At the end of Trailer Park Trickster, the guys are divided. So a spoiler. Basically, here's your big spoiler if you haven't read book two yet. At the end of book two, it's a bit of a Pyrrhic victory. Vic is lost and Adam doesn't know where he's gone. But he goes to get help. Yep, he goes to get help. And the help he receives tells him he's got to take a road trip through the underworld. And hell is very personal. So it starts with having to go back through his own past a bit. So yeah, so Adam is driving with some allies. So I'll keep some spoilers in for you. But Adam's driving with some allies to find Vic.
Can everybody else take their headphones out and you can tell me who the allies are?
And then... and then
is one if I just like show a tarot card, is one of those
one? Well, I don't want to spoil it too much, but it's neither. He doesn't want either of them to come along. Yeah. I will say, okay, one of them is an elf. I will tell you that.
There's a lot of you're not coming. Yes, I am. You can't stop me. Okay, then fine. Get in the car.
Oh no, I don't have the right one. I'm sorry. I have like a ton of tarot cards pulled out and I'm like, hold on, let me pull up a card. Nope,
but
I won't.
I loved it. So what happens is each gate, because he has to drive down, each gate down is a different town or a different stop. And they're all real places. So for example, Dead Woman's Crossing in Weatherford, Oklahoma has a famous haunting of these two women who died there. It's an unsolved mystery from, I believe, the late 1800s. The research was a couple of years ago and a few books ago, so forgive me if I'm mixing up details.
But how dare you?
Each of these stops is a real place, and each of these things that happened, the flood of Amarillo, Texas, that really happened. So all these things that I'm using were occurrences. And you can see me kind of pulling from, if you map it in your brain, they're following Route 66, but it's the ghost of Route 66, because Route 66 isn't still
it's there. Incomplete. Now it stops and restarts in random places.
Well, there's beautiful symmetry there. Then it's like you're on a ghost trip for a ghost.
Or it's just like
on a ghost road.
Crappy mini malls and stuff. They just like, they didn't care about Route 66 after a while. Route 66 and the Lincoln Highway, you know, are these like epic trips that people can take or could take in the United States. And now they are, you know, shadows of what they were. I have a very good friend who is obsessed with them. I own now a ton of his stuff because he, like, that was his goal in life, was to drive them as originally as they could be.
I used as much of that as possible.
I love that.
So it's a ghost road, literally. And so there's the road trip aspect. And then from the other end of the situation, you have Vic, who's trying to make his way up as Adam is driving his way down. And then each stop and everything they encounter in the book is drawn with a little bit of real history. For example, a lot of people didn't know there were World War II POWs, Nazis, camped out all over the Southwest. And we had a bunch in Oklahoma. They just put them out in camps in the plains and often didn't guard them or lock them up. So they would wander away.
So we actually heard a little bit about this because there was a bit of a hubbub on Twitter maybe a year or so ago about someone who wrote a POW romance. And we're like, wait.
Nazi romance.
The Nazi romance. Yeah. And it was like, wait. How did this get a traditional book deal? This woman wrote a Nazi. No, we're not far enough away to make Nazis romantic. You can't do, because it's never said the word Nazi, but we're like, wait. A German POW in World War II. No, we call those Nazis. Yeah, that's Nazi.
Well, and there was one of those books pops up a year. Somebody publishes one. But I will say, I think two controversies back.
Which community though?
I know, but the romance community was up in arms. But the truth was, they weren't reading the book because what she was doing is she was seducing them to kill them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, and I don't
think
that
was a whole like. Yeah. There was this whole like, oh, it's a Nazi romance. I'm like, you're not reading the whole thing because she.
So I think that's the one we were reading was really no. That was
there crazy. Are there are several not of these Nazi romances, and believe me, I have a very clear statement on that in depth. Encounter some of those.
I think we can all say very clearly that historian gay David R. Slayton is not.
Yeah,
pro-Nazi romance.
There's literally a character who's like, can we feed the Nazi ghost to the demons? Like,
there was some profanity that followed, and I laughed out loud at that line. I'm not going to say it, but...
Again, say it after so YouTube doesn't, like...
get mad at us too much.
No, you said gay and a lot of words about Nazis. And
I know. We're going to get tagged as this is like somehow promoting that. We're like, no, algorithms, not that smart. Try it again.
Moral of the story, not Nazis bad. That's really it.
Nazis bad.
That's.
So can I, you obviously know about Route 66, Lincoln Highway, these historic American highways and roads. Did you ever take the trips yourself to the most during COVID, pre-COVID, after COVID?
Did as much during COVID as possible, which was not fun, but and I was sad because I had a whole like I was going to do a whole road trip while I was riding Druid. COVID was in full swing and I wanted to drive, do a long week and stop and do a lot of photos and then this time when the book's coming out, I could do like Instagram videos and yeah, all that went out the window. But no, I buy a lot of artifacts. I have, my aunt lived in Watonga, Oklahoma, which shows up in the book. And near her is the section of Route 66 they actually pulled up to take to the Smithsonian. And when they did that.
That just gave me chills all over.
Yeah, she sent me chunks. So I have a few chunks of Route 66 somewhere around here. I have a hood ornament from Adam's car. Like, I don't want to have to go buy an actual 76
you can't get a cutlass. Yeah, you'd have to, you live in like the South Southwest. There's amazing. I know when I've traveled in the South, for a little while, I was on a road trip with a million years ago, long time ex, in a vintage German car. And when a vintage German car breaks down in the middle of nowhere of Mississippi on a Sunday, you get to go into junkyards.
I was going to say, like, you don't go anywhere then, do you?
You go to junkyards and people are incredibly helpful and very sweet. But I just remember like looking at all like those old cars, those like Cutlasses, those things like that. And just like admiring the work on them. My dad was a mechanic. So like I always admired but feared cars because daddy issues. And like having the people that work at the junkyards just be like, yeah, you can take whatever you want from the top.
Pick apart.
Like, because it was me. Because I, at the time, I was like a cuter girl, like 20 something. And they're just like, you can take whatever you want. You take that little horsey right off that if you want to. And I'm like,
that's funny.
I would have walked away with like 7 hood ornaments. Whee!
I really wanted to. I walked away with one.
It is funny, though, because I was trying to do the background image for this. And when I looked up Cutlass, there was one picture of a car and a bunch of swords. I'm like, wrong Cutlass, guys. Come on.
Somebody did a great Goodreads review for Trailer Park Trickster. They have a picture of the Cutlass. They have a picture of the macaroni with the hot dogs in it. So like they put in, like they really got the feel for it. I love that review. Every time I see it on Goodreads, I laugh. But the Cutlass is, yeah. Why did I get the Cutlass. The whole reason Adam drives that car is because the boy I had a crush on in high school drove it.
Oh, I love it.
I love that
scene. If you're watching somewhere.
If David, you're watching, boy.
Please, no, I'm sure.
You drove a Cutlass. David liked you. That's your sign. Yeah. I know we all wanted to know who secretly had crushes on us in high school.
Oh, I think my answer was no one.
No, you didn't like anybody?
No, I liked tons of people.
Oh, they just didn't like you back. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that I understand that. Yeah.
I mean, it was all the wrong, like all the wrong sex at all the wrong time. Like, there was a lot of like, before I even understood that I liked girls, a lot of people being like, you seem like a lesbian. And me being like, I don't know, do I seem like a lesbian? And then when I liked guys, it was only girls that liked me. So New Hampshire's weird, man. You're just...
Hold on.
You're never going to get it. It's always going to
be shy and awkward. And the other kids thought I was a Satanist because I didn't talk. And so
I don't. That's an interesting conclusion. He doesn't talk. He must worship Satan.
Yeah, it was so. Someone asked me, like, why do you worship
Satan? Was it the late 90s? Was it the late 90s?
It was the early 90s, but yes.
Oh, okay. So you were.
You have to remember that Oklahoma exists in a time warp.
Yeah, no, you're at least 10 years behind. And I know I've driven through places where that happens because we live in California. We live in California since I was little. And there are parts of California driving up north where you just somehow lose decades. And you look around and you're like, what happened? Why are those people dressed like, oh, no, we're in that part of the world where time doesn't move quite the same.
So early 90s, Oklahoma was like height of satanic panic of the 1980s of like the East Coast and West Coast elites.
Oh yes. We could go through that too. Mom had that definitely that period in the '80s. But so Adam's relationship to the spirit world was really informed by having a mother telling me every day that there were demons and things all around us and how that was, you know, that was really a lot for a 10-year-old. My mom got very into all that when I was a kid. And so it really, that idea that there's this other world just on the, you know, just a step away or just on the other side of a very thin curtain was something that I grew up with because my mom got so into that mindset.
So I think you just tapped into one of the reasons why I loved Adam so much that like even I didn't understand. So thank you. Like, again, grew up rural, poor, very, very Catholic mother. But there's a lot of mental illness in her family. So one of my aunts had paranoid schizophrenia. She would come and spend her summers with us. And my aunt with schizophrenia would full-blown every day, all day say, I'm not sick. It's ghosts. It's spirits. I only talk to the dead. And me as a child, like, that's valid. Me as an adult, that's still valid, but also schizophrenia, very valid, very much was on the table.
Well, I was waiting for you to say your mom would be calling in the priest to be like, can we do some exorcisms? So like, could we maybe get her therapy just as an option? But, you know, you do.
Yeah, there was a lot of, like, fear of the Bible, the Catholic 1980s, 1990s, like, Bible mixed with kind of like some new agey mental illness going on in my house only during summers. And then like once my aunt would go back to Florida to her trailer park, we would just go back to being like, and Jesus, end point.
Just wall that off there. Yeah. Well, that is like, instead of seasonal agitative depression, you have some kind of completely different seasonal schizophrenia.
Seasonal schizophrenia summers actually were like weirdly lovely because they involved yoga. My aunt like skinny dipping in a neighbor's pool. Her
Did
talking
they
to
allow
posters
that?
Of Elvis. I mean, they didn't not allow it.
Okay. Just like, eh. I feel like
schizophrenia summers could be like the title of your memoir.
I mean, I'm not saying it's not on the short list.
Make a list because Jen has learned she's not allowed to joke about titles because she will have to write the book.
Please stop. Please
stop. Yeah, and for us, it was the opposite. There was never a conversation about therapy or mental illness. Everything, kind of like you have a lot of parents now who ascribe everything to diet. Oh, she must have gotten us some sugar, and that's why my
kid. It's just gluten intolerance.
Exactly. Or my kid must have gotten some processed food. That's why they're freaking out on the airplane. For us, it was, oh, it must be a spirit or something's agitating that baby. Or so we got to pray about it or go to the church and have a lot of guys in suits put their hands on you and scream at you in tongues.
Can we pray away the gluten? Is that a thing?
We haven't prayed away the gay. Can we pray away the gluten? If they could pray away the gluten, that would be freaking great for my body.
There's a real belief system there that you can transmute matter, that you can mm-hmm. alter things. We were somewhere and there was a sweet, like it was when they, like we thought saccharin would cause cancer and I don't know.
But there was the aspartame stuff.
This is our carcinogen. Don't eat that. Like, oh, it's okay. I just prayed about it before I ate it. So it's okay. Like I said.
So it's okay. Like, you know, baby Jesus will not let me get cancer because I'm trying to cut calories. Because that's also like diet culture with religion. And those were like sacred in the late 80s.
So there was just this whole permutation of that. Like, did you ever read Isabel Allende's The House of Ghosts?
Yes.
Very much like that, with just the idea that there's spirits all around us. And there's angels and demons. And they're just constantly trying to reach through into the mortal world and affect things. And so for Adam to be, I thought that was a good way to handle Adam's sight, is that he can't control it and he's losing touch with reality, which is kind of a bit of a metaphor for disassociation and a little bit of that disconnect. And that's what's happening to him in his teens and what leads to his separation from his brother.
Well, and all of the way that Bobby handles it is honestly so much of the same way that families handle anyone who doesn't present as neurotypical, cisgender. We just be like, okay, well, we don't want to deal with you because you aren't presenting the way we expected you to. And it's too hard for us to adapt. So we're just going to lock you away somewhere. That's easier, right?
And, you know, like, again, spoiler alert, but this is the first book. Bobby was, you know, manipulated in a way, obviously, to believe those things more than he wanted to. I don't think he would have gone directly to, we're institutionalizing my brother.
I mean, there was manipulation going on, but determining how much of it was Bobby's own choices. And then we learn more about some of Bobby's choices and all that.
Probably
and,
later on in the books that I
have. Well, but I mean, we do. So it's not, it isn't cut and dry, but I mean, I do think that it's not.
I know, it's definitely not cut and dry.
Well, you know, Bobby's off scot-free. I'm not letting off that easy.
No, I'm not either. But I'm saying there is manipulation. I think there is manipulation even like in the real world when people send their loved ones to a facility. I came from a family who had a lot of people in facilities that were, you know, there for reasons maybe they should be or maybe they shouldn't, but they're was a lot of heavy-handed manipulation behind the scenes. And I think obviously in this case, it makes Bobby more likable, but not.
I like that there's a conversation happening. One of my favorite things about these books is the discussion about Bobby and how people talk about this. And I get so many emails where I started the book and I hate Bobby. And then I get another email like, a few weeks later or a couple months later, I finished the book and I still hate him, but I understand. Or you know, I get a lot of that. And I love it. I love the people who can get through to the end to kind of,
you know, understand. I'm only halfway through book two, and he's such an incredible character. So bravo to you for creating someone that we do hate at first glance, can understand completely off and on throughout, and be still baffled by.
Well, and I love the different family dynamics you set up, especially just comparing Adam's family and Vic's family. And if Vic's family is looking to adopt a little white girl, I am open for adoption. I know I'm a little past adoptable age, but I love his mother so much. I love his brother so much, all of them. And then just seeing, like, okay, different kinds of acceptance, different kinds of cultural backgrounds, and just parts, conversations. And I want to say it may have been in the second book. It's been too long for me to draw the line between book one and book two about even being seen with your partner in public and what people are going to think about it. Because in some places, possibly certain places where there might be more trailers than other types of homes, that wouldn't be something you could even think about doing without having really bad things possibly happen. And Vic's just like, my mom made us dinner.
Yeah. And that I love. So the best thing about the Martinez family is they're a mirror to the Binders. Yeah. So whereas they both fathers are absent. So there's a change mm-hmm. there for different reasons. What I love about setting up the Martinez are sort of the funhouse mirror version of the Binders, because the Binders have that Midwestern, we don't talk about anything. We don't talk about the bad stuff. The Martinez family talks about everything with everyone. There's absolutely no secret. And so Adam's like, spirit world, all this stuff. And Vic's like, so yeah, I told my mom about that. It's just this very open conversation that they're having. I love Vic's brother, Jesse, is the opposite of Bobby. Like there's definitely some very purposeful parallels and purposeful reversals in the way. And it was just fun to throw Adam at them, because Adam is so used to his family dynamic and doesn't know anything else, that when he encounters the Martinez family, they're, you know, I love it when they invite him to have Chinese food and he's,
I haven't gotten there. And oh my God, I cannot wait.
Chinese food is spoiler. They eat Chinese. Well, food.
It's such a cute
moment. I would love to like just see that scene.
And just can't wait. I got to play with stereotypes too, right? Where they're like, what? You thought it would just be tacos? Like you thought it would just be, you know, that this is how we are. And I love that I can play with stereotypes of what a Mexican American family looks like. And I love that we're flipping things around. And it was fun to throw that at Adam and just to show him, hey, there's a whole other way the world could be than the way that your family processes it.
And I think that's the key word, that exactly what you just said is the way his family processes it. Mm-hmm. It's not that his family, I mean, yes, his family is different in many ways because of the whole magic and mysterious disappearances of fathers of it all. Those things are different than how I grew up. But at the core of their family, what makes them interesting is how they process or not process trauma and grief. And that's like at the heart of every good story, I feel like, is somebody not coming to terms with something. And they are ripe with it.
And you got to pull it out. You got to get into a character's head. You got to get into their heart and try to figure out. If I read so many books where I just don't care. And that is particularly what I was trying to do here, is a lot of urban fantasy, the character is this all-powerful badass and they're irresistible to everyone and all that. And I wanted someone who's more vulnerable. I wanted someone who's carrying that trauma. But it's more like an open wound. Like, yeah, you've got plenty of characters who have tragic backstories, and that tragic backstory is there. And it maybe informs and does stuff. But I really wanted this to be an open wound. And
I'm just laughing every time you say wound, because I want to take a shot, partially because of this book. Mm-hmm. And because that is a theme that shows up, and I won't spoil it more because Jennifer and others have not gotten there yet, but
because it's not out yet.
It's stuff that's addressed, and what we do with those wounds and how we draw from those and what we do with them afterwards. And
even I think as writers, people who write a lot about like grief or trauma or things like that. You know, we take workshop after workshop, class after class, listen to lecture after lecture of people saying, don't write from the wound, write from the scar. I don't agree with that. I actually prefer a more immediate kind of visceral response.
It's messier.
To trauma. I like messier.
Me too.
And I get why people say like, no, write from scar, write from when you're detached from it. But I never felt Adam was detached from things. And that's what I loved about him. Because he's like, yeah, this might have happened 5 years ago, but I'm still F-word feeling it right now.
Well, and even when we, going back to where he starts and his whole original motivations for all of this, he has not dealt with anything at that point. Like, okay, no, I'm no longer at that place, but I still haven't really moved past that. And then learning that some of the people and things that he learned during his time there weren't what he thought they were. And then it's like, even when I'm recovering from my trauma, I get new traumas to deal with, because I think that's how life is too, that you get a trauma and it's not just, okay, heal, now I'm better. It's you're continually breaking open that scab and forming new gashes along it.
It's funny because you say that, all I can hear is Oprah, and you get a trauma, and you get a trauma.
And we all get a trauma. And then after you've opened that trauma, look under your seat. Well, you got another trauma.
Trauma!
Life is hard.
I think that, trauma.
That's, we can become
trauma.
Jaded.
Antlers. Jennifer.
I have antlers. I haven't used them
yet. I don't
yet.
Know why.
You needed more props.
You know, I have multiple.
But I feel like trauma and experiences, life is hard. We are constantly going through things. I do feel by the end of Debbie Druid, Adam has put a lot of it to bed or healed as much as he can from some things. He is at peace with some things and who he is and where it comes from. And that's really important to me. If the series does continue, I don't want to go back to the same wells, right? Yeah. And I do hope to write more books. I know how book four starts. So I'm like, come on, I hope we get it. But I don't want to keep going back to that same well of his childhood and the same family relationships. I want them to evolve and grow, because I get really bored with a character who I read, you know, 15 books and they
haven't gotten over it yet.
Or they just aren't growing. And you see it like TV, you watch a series for 7 or 8 seasons and you're like, this person is the same person they were 7 years ago. And I'm bored. I'm bored with that.
Yeah. You can't keep rehashing the same stuff.
And that tells me it's lazy writing too, that what they're working from isn't then a fully fleshed out character, but a cardboard character, because a cardboard character can't change. And if what they're going through, unless it's The Simpsons where you're animated and intentionally not letting people change, everybody should be growing along the way. And if you're not, then the writing got lazy.
Yeah. And I love it when I love it when you can see change and you can see growth. My nephew got me into Rick and Morty at one point, and third book is dedicated to him. And I didn't really like it the first couple seasons, but I stuck with it. And now I've come back and I'm like, there's growth here. And they actually did something. They actually, because there's always a game of multiverse and different things. They got to compare current version of Chris Parnell's Jerry character to season 2.
Ooh.
And you got to see, he has grown. He has changed. And they got to call it out in a very kind of funny, cute way. But it was nice because I was like, that's what I needed was growth, right? I needed to see it non-cut out. So for Adam, I wanted him to bleed. I wanted it to be more immediate. And he didn't have the emotional maturity at the start of book 1 for it to be a scar. It hasn't. That's not.
He was that. 20.
It was raw.
He was a kid.
I mean,
raw.
Gosh. How messy were all of us, I'm sure, at 20?
You're kidding. I was a disaster. And he's
so
based
gross.
A lot on me. I was a disaster.
You're like, I was a disaster. He's based on me. I was worse.
I was worse in a lot of ways. Adam's really based a lot on my 23-year-old self. And so there's a comment where Bobby mentions Adam is, his growth is not where it should be as a person because of his experiences. Mm-hmm. That is straight up me. Like I was 20 walking around with a lot of mindsets that would have fit better on a 17 or 18 year old. Took me a long time. And I feel like sometimes I'm still catching up. So I gave Adam a lot of those traits.
I love that.
Well,
I love that.
you also mentioned earlier that you don't like the kind of fantasies where you have these overpowered heroes. And so despite what they say about warlock and trickster and druid, Adam is not this one who's out there just like doing the spells and fixing everything along the way. So for people who haven't read it and are going, oh, I don't know if I'm really into the urban fantasy stuff because they don't like characters like that, you're not going to find that here. And not that Adam doesn't develop in those ways as well, but he's never able to just snap his fingers and solve all the problems. And I've read fantasies like that, where it's like, look at me channeling the entire universe, corralling the entire universe. I control the entire universe. No, not Adam.
I am a goddess and then I'm not. And then that, then you have the Sailor Moon problem, where how do you take a character up to that level and then you keep them human when they're, you know, able to sunder planets. And I like him being terrified of Argent. I like him being terrified of these greater powers. It's fun to play with that. It's fun to add him to be wimpy and confused
and funny and quirky. Like you really created, and again, I don't want to be like, I don't like urban fantasy, because that's not true, but I've read a lot of urban fantasy that is the tropes that we've already talked about. You know, it's a testament to these books that as I was reading them, every once in a while I'd go, oh, why is there a gnome? And I'm like, oh, I'm reading fantasy.
Because the
characters are so real and the heart of the stories are so real that it didn't take me out of it when I was just like, oh, okay.
Well, and it does help that you have fantasy characters who also have their own. I mean, I don't want to say that I like to cosplay, but they kind of like to cosplay, and some of their stylistic choices are not what you expect.
And Argent and I have the same love aesthetic of the same cosplay. I know, yes. I'm like, oh, I also cosplay as a 1920s, early 1930s movie star.
Exactly.
Argent is 50% River Song from Doctor Who and 50% Mae West. And I think that's
perfect.
That's the energy I was trying to channel when I was.
How big is her hair then? Seriously.
Her hair must be humongous.
It can get huge. Well, she can change it.
She can change it. I was going to say, with the humidity, you would have to change it. That would be the one power I would really want to harness as an elf.
I do love that she'll just, you know, take the time to. She has costume changes a lot because of that sort. Someone said the other day on a podcast, she would fit perfectly in a Fast and Furious movie. And I thought that was such a fantastic take on it.
Oh my gosh. I would actually watch a Fast and Furious movie if she was in it, because I love the way she loves cars. And this is going to sound weird, but like, she reminded me in that sense of my dad, like the best qualities of my dad, the way she was just like, when she would like pick a car for a certain thing where she's like, I just don't want to be too showy. It's still a completely showy car. I'm like,
that's the non-showy car?
Mm-hmm. Well, my dad was a mechanic and he worked for a pretty big garage. And on the weekends, before a customer would be able to pick up their car on Mondays, he was allowed to bring a car home. So that really poor house in the really rich town, every once in a while had a ridiculous car in the driveway. And I'm like, no one believes this is ours.
No, especially because it's a different car each time.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's interesting. You didn't have a Bentley last time.
Exactly. I mean, it was nothing that classy, because it was it was the 80s. It was like terrible, like an IROC Z or like a Trans Am with like a busted fender.
My dad, during his whole midlife crisis stage, went through the Trans Am Camaro. It was a Camaro period. And then he got a classic car that he thought of as a hot rod, but it was actually like a station wagon. It was
How did he confuse a hot rod and a station wagon?
The delusion was strong. And he did the whole cliche, like got the earring and grew the ponytail and balding on top, like the whole bit.
So it really didn't even matter what the car was. It just mattered the year of the car. Like it could have been a 1974, whatever the F. It was fine.
And we weren't in the same state, so my mother couldn't have yelled at your father, but my mom used to love to pull up next to cars like that when it would be like the 40-year-old guy who clearly was going through his midlife crisis dressed like that. And as soon as we would pull away, she would yell, sorry about your penis.
Oh, I still do. My partner does that.
to people.
I'll tell you who I yell at that to after we are done, and we are sadly out of time. We are at know, like on that note, we actually are out of time.
Place to cut on.
I know. Good place to cut on, like where I yell at people from the car window. David, thank you so much for being here. You are awesome. Everyone, this comes out on the 18th. Yay!
Tuesday,
read the entire series. Is that Tuesday already? Is Tuesday the 18th?
Tuesday the 18th.
Yeah, because today's the 12th. So don't make me math, but that's 6 days from now.
Okay. I get
not
that math.
My whole week. That's about everybody. Most math I can do.
I will say I picked up the first two books on my Kindle. They were on sale for 99 cents each. So
they still are too. So
is a bargain and a half. Buy everything right now. I'm demanding you, if you're watching this live, if you're watching the replay, if you're just listening to our voices and you missed all the times I picked up my lived, laughed, loved. My antlers. My rocks from the fairy beach.
Well, and I will tarot say, cards. As far as listening, I listened to the first two books because I think when we had our first chat, I know the first one was already out, and I think the second one had come out recently enough that I could still get it on Audible. This one I couldn't, and I was disappointed because I did love your narrator. So I'm like, I have to use my eyeballs. It's still
you just have to like mimic the voice in your head.
Michael does a great job. He does a phenomenal job, and his wife Meredith does the production and direction for it. So they do a phenomenal job on the audio. I love my audio books. They really can't say enough good stuff about them. So yeah, try them on audio.
So everybody try the audio, try the Kindle, try them.
Get them.
Read them. Love them. I did. We did. David, thank you for being here. Everyone who is watching live or listening to the replay, stay tuned next week. We have Alistair Cross, the author of the best-selling series, The Vampires of Crimson Cove, and he is going to be here talking about his latest release. I'm going to say it wrong.
It's not Crimson Corset, is it?
No, that's the first one. It's the Reaper something, and now all I have is Vic in my head, so I'm going to say
wrong Reaper.
It's the wrong Reaper. I've got the wrong Reaper in my head. But yes, Alistair Cross, Vampires of Crimson Cove. He will be here next week, and we will see you all then.
Bye.
Bye.